Welcome to the deep dive. Think about the world around you for a second, everything you hear, maybe even some things you feel. It's all tied together by, well, waves, mostly invisible, but incredibly important. So today we're diving deep, really deep into waves and sound, the basic principles.
Right.
Our mission, as always, is to take some dense info, like the material from Principi di Onde e Suono, and pull out the key stuff, the nuggets that help you get up to speed fast.
Yeah, and hopefully have a few of those aha moments along the way.
Exactly.
Painlessly.
And I think this dive is, it's going to be a bit different. We're not just listing definitions.
Right.
We want to connect the dots, you know, show how a ripple in a pond and like the music you stream are actually related, governed by the same physics deep down.
So the goal for you listening is quick, solid knowledge, those satisfying clicks when things make sense.
Right. Without getting bogged down.
Well,
by the end, you should have a totally new appreciation for this hidden symphony going on all around us. Okay, let's unpack this then, starting right at the beginning. The building blocks. Mm-hmm. If waves are these disturbances carrying energy, what are they? Like, at the very core, how do we start describing them?
Okay, so at its heart, a wave is basically a disturbance.
Yeah.
It travels through something we call a medium.
A medium.
Yeah, that's just the material it moves through. It could be water, air, rock, whatever. But the key thing is, waves transport energy.
Mm-hmm.
And momentum. Not the actual material itself. That mostly stays put. Think of a crowd doing the wave at a stadium.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The people just move up and down, right? They don't run around the stadium. But the wave, that pattern of movement, definitely travels.
That's a great analogy. So the pattern travels, not the water molecules themselves making a huge trip across the sea.
Precisely.
Got it. Okay, so these patterns.
Yeah.
How do we categorize them? We hear about transversal and longitudinal waves. What's the difference? Can you give us some like quick examples?
Sure. So transversal waves are where the medium moves perpendicular.
Yeah.
At right angles to the direction the wave is traveling.
They're perpendicular, like shaking a rope up and down.
Exactly like that. Or a waterway, the water goes up and down, the wave travels horizontally.
Okay. And longitudinal.
Longitudinal is when the medium moves back and forth parallel to the direction the wave is traveling.
Parallel.
Think of compressing and stretching a slinky toy. That's a perfect longitudinal wave. Sound waves in air work like this, too.
Ah, sound waves. We'll get back to those. So broadly, then, we put waves into two big buckets.
Pretty much. You've got electromagnetic waves, things like light, radio waves. They're special because they don't need a medium. They can travel through vacuum.
Like space.
Exactly. And then you have mechanical waves, which do need a medium. Sound is a classic example. Seismic waves through the earth, waves on a string. Those are mechanical.
Fascinating. Okay, so light, sound, ripples.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of the type, are there common ways to describe any wave? Like, what makes one wave bigger or faster?
Absolutely. There are a few key properties. First off, amplitude.
Amplitude.
That's basically the wave strength or intensity. You can think of it as the maximum displacement from the rest position.
So like the height of a water wave.
Exactly. A tiny ripple has a small amplitude.
Mm-hmm.
A huge tsunami wave has an enormous amplitude. It tells you how much energy the wave is carrying.
Okay, amplitude is energy. What else?
Then there's wavelength. That's the distance between identical points on consecutive cycles.
Yeah.
So from one crest to the very next crest, for example.
Got it. Like the length of one complete wave pattern.
Yep. And related to that is frequency. That's how many complete wave cycles pass a point in a given amount of time. Usually measured in hertz, which is cycles per second.
Higher frequency means more waves passing by each second.
Right. And the inverse of frequency is the period. That's just the time it takes for one single complete cycle to happen.
Okay. Amplitude, wavelength, frequency, period. Anything else?
Yes. A really crucial one. Propagation velocity. How fast the wave actually travels through the medium.
And what determines that speed?
Well, it's related to wavelength and frequency. You can calculate it from those. But fundamentally, the velocity depends massively on the properties of the medium itself.
Ah, so sound travels at different speeds in air versus water.
Exactly. Or think about a guitar string. The speed of a wave along that string depends on how tight it is, the tension, and how thick or heavy it is.
Right, which is why tuning works. Tightening the string changes the speed, changes the frequency.
Precisely. It changes the pitch you hear.
Okay, I'm picturing these waves, but how do scientists actually, you know, visualize them or model them? I hear terms like wavefront, plane wave, spherical wave, even rays. What are those about?
Those are all ways to conceptualize how waves spread out. A wavefront is just a line or surface connecting points on the wave that are all in the same phase, like all the crests of ripples spreading out from a pebble dropped in water.
Like concentric circles.
Exactly. If you're very far from the source, those wavefronts can look almost flat, like straight lines or planes. That's what we call a plane wave. It's often a useful approximation.
Okay. And spherical.
A spherical wave is what you get from a point source, like a tiny light bulb, sending waves out equally in all directions. The wavefronts are spheres expanding outwards.
And rays. They sound like something from geometry class.
They kind of are. Rays are imaginary lines drawn perpendicular to the wavefronts. They just show the direction the wave energy is traveling. Super useful in optics for figuring out how light bounces or bends.
Got it. So, ways to visualize the spread. Okay, we've laid the groundwork. Universal wave stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Now let's zoom in. Let's talk about the wave type we probably interact with most consciously every single day. Sound. This is where it gets really interesting, I think. Our everyday symphony.
It really is. And sound waves specifically are longitudinal waves. We touched on that.
Right, the slinky kind. Back and forth.
Exactly. The particles of the medium, usually air, for us, oscillate back and forth parallel to the direction the sound is moving. This creates areas where the air is compressed.
Squished together.
Yeah, and areas where it's spread apart, rarefied. And these compressions and rarefactions travel outwards from the source.
And what creates those compressions? What's the source?
Vibrations. Anything that vibrates can create sound.
Mm.
Plug a guitar string, it vibrates. Hit a drum, the skin vibrates. A tuning fork vibrates at a very specific frequency when you strike it.
And those vibrations push and pull the air nearby.
Precisely. They set up those pressure waves, those oscillations in the air that travel to our ears. And our eardrums vibrate in response.
Mm.
And our brain interprets that as sound.
Amazing. So when we hear sound, we perceive different qualities. We know about pitch, like a high note versus a low note.
Right. Pitch is directly related to the frequency of the sound wave. Higher frequency, higher pitch. Lower frequency, lower pitch.
And we perceive intensity, which is basically loudness, right? How loud or soft it is.
Correct. Intensity relates to the amplitude of the sound wave. Bigger amplitude, more energy, louder sound.
Okay. Pitch is frequency. Intensity is amplitude. But there's something else. Like, why does a violin playing a note sound so different from a piano playing the exact same note? Same pitch, maybe same loudness, but different.
That's timbre. Sometimes called the tone color or quality of the sound.
Timbre. Right. What causes that?
Timbre is fascinatingly complex. It's determined by the presence and relative intensity of overtones or harmonics.
Overtone.
Yeah. When something vibrates, like that violin string, it doesn't just vibrate at its main fundamental frequency. It also vibrates simultaneously at multiples of that frequency. Those are the overtones.
Ah, so it's a mix of frequencies.
Exactly. And the specific mix, which overtones are strong, which are weak, gives each instrument or each voice its unique character, its timbre. Even frequencies we can't consciously hear, like very high ones in the ultrasound range, can contribute to the perceived timbre.
Wow. Okay. And on the other end, you mentioned infrasound.
Yeah. That sound with frequencies below the range of human hearing. Think really low rumbles, like from earthquakes or volcanoes. Elephants use infrasound to communicate over long distances.
And then there's just noise. How is that different from a musical note?
Well, musical notes typically have very regular, periodic vibrations, leading to clear pitches and harmonics. Noise, on the other hand, tends to be characterized by irregular, non-periodic vibrations. It's a jumble of frequencies without that clear structure.
Makes sense. Now, measuring sound intensity, you mentioned amplitude, but we usually talk about decibels, right? Yeah. What's the deal with that unit?
Right, the decibel, or dB. Mm. It's the standard unit we use. The important thing to remember is that it's a logarithmic scale.
Logarithmic, meaning not linear.
Exactly. It's based on powers of 10. This means a small increase in decibels actually represents a huge increase in sound intensity or power. A 10 dB increase is roughly a tenfold increase in intensity.
Why use such a complicated scale?
Because our ears perceive loudness logarithmically too. We can hear an incredibly vast range of sound intensities, from a pin drop to a jet engine. A logarithmic scale compresses that huge range into more manageable numbers, matching our perception better.
Ah, that makes sense. Are there important decibel levels to know?
Yeah, there are a couple of key benchmarks. There's the level of audibility, which is around 0 dB, the quietest sound the average healthy human ear can detect.
0 decibels isn't silence, then?
Not quite. It's the threshold. And then there's the pain threshold, which is way up there, around 120 or 130 dB. Sounds that intense can actually cause physical pain and damage your hearing.
Good to know. And intensity changes with distance, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
For a sound wave spreading out from a point source, like someone talking, the intensity drops off rapidly as you get further away. It follows an inverse square law, actually.
Which is why you have to shout to be heard across a large room.
Exactly. And, you know, speaking of sound bouncing around rooms, that brings up echo.
Ah, yes, echoes.
An echo is simply a reflection of a sound wave. The wave hits a surface, a wall, a mountain, and bounces back. If the surface is far enough away, you hear the reflected sound as a distinct repeat of the original.
And that's why rooms sound different. Hard surfaces cause more reflection, more echo.
Precisely. Hard, smooth surfaces reflect sound well, leading to echoes and reverberation. Soft, irregular surfaces, like carpets or curtains, absorb sound, reducing echoes. That's the whole basis of acoustics in concert halls. And why singing in the shower sounds so good.
Totally. Okay, so we know what waves are, what sound is, what happens when waves meet each other or meet obstacles. Let's get into the interactions, the dance of waves.
Right. The most fundamental principle here is the superposition principle.
Superposition sounds fancy.
It's actually quite simple, conceptually. It just says that when two or more waves overlap in the same space, the resulting disturbance at any point is just the vector sum of the disturbances of the individual waves.
They just add up.
They add up. Or subtract, depending on how they meet. They pass right through each other, but where they overlap, their effects combine.
And this leads to interference.
Exactly. This leads directly to the phenomenon of interference. There are two main types.
Okay.
You have constructive interference. This happens when the crests of one wave line up with the crests of another and troughs line up with troughs. They reinforce each other.
So the resulting wave is bigger, higher amplitude.
Precisely. The amplitude of the combined wave is greater than the individual waves.
And the other type?
Destructive interference. This is when the crests of one wave line up with the troughs of the other.
They're out of sync.
Perfectly out of sync. In this case, they tend to cancel each other out. The resulting wave has a smaller amplitude. Or if the original waves had equal amplitudes, they can cancel out completely at that point. Zero amplitude.
Wow. So waves can literally cancel each other out.
They can. And understanding interference, especially for nice regular waves like sine waves, harmonic waves, involves thinking about their phase.
Phase. What's that exactly?
Phase tells you where a wave is in its cycle at a particular point or time. Like, is it a crest, a trough, or somewhere in between? The initial phase is where it starts.
Okay.
Now, if two waves are in phase, it means their crests and troughs happen at the same time and place. They interfere constructively.
Makes sense.
If they are in opposition to phase or 180 degrees out of phase, the crest of one meets the trough of the other. They interfere destructively.
Got it. And this phase difference or phase shift between waves is key to predicting how they'll interfere.
Absolutely critical. It governs whether you get constructive, destructive, or something in between. This is huge in everything from optics to antenna design. Even noise-canceling headphones work on this principle, creating sound waves that destructively interfere with incoming noise.
That's clever. Okay, so waves combine. What about bending? You mentioned sound bending around corners. That's diffraction.
Yes, diffraction. It's the tendency of waves to spread out or bend as they pass through an opening or around an obstacle.
Why does that happen?
You can think of every point on a wavefront as acting like a new source of secondary wavelets. When these wavelets spread out past an edge or through a slit, they interfere, causing the wave to bend into the region that would otherwise be in shadow.
Ah, okay. So we see diffraction around an obstacle, like water waves bending around a rock.
Yep, or diffraction through a slit or opening. If the opening is narrow, roughly the size of the wavelength, the diffraction effect is really noticeable. The waves spread out significantly.
And you said diffraction of sound waves is common.
Very common. Sound waves in the audible range have wavelengths from centimeters up to meters. That's comparable to the size of everyday objects like doorways or people. So sound diffracts easily around them.
Which is why I can hear you, even if you're just around the corner.
Exactly. Light waves have much shorter wavelengths, nanometers, so diffraction of light is usually only noticeable with very small obstacles or slits.
Right. Okay, another common experience. The sound of a siren changing pitch as it passes you. The Doppler effect.
Ah, yes, the Doppler effect. Classic example. It's the change in observed frequency of a wave when the source of the wave and the observer are moving relative to each other.
So in any ambulance is...
These waves pile up ahead of it, forming a high-pressure cone called a shock wave. When that shock wave passes an observer on the ground, they hear it as a sudden, loud... supersonic bang or sonic boom.
Intense. Okay, one more wave pattern that seems really important, especially for music. Standing waves. You mentioned them briefly. They look like they're not even moving.
They do look stationary, don't they? Standing waves are formed when two identical waves traveling in opposite directions interfere with each other.
But a wave and its reflection.
Exactly.
Yeah.
A common way they form is from the reflection of a wave at the end of a string, for example. If a string is fixed at both ends, like on a guitar,
yeah,
waves travel down the string, reflect off the end, and travel back. If the conditions are right, the original wave and the reflected wave interfere to create a standing wave pattern.
What are the right conditions?
The key is that the length of the string must be just right to accommodate a whole number of half wavelengths of the wave. This happens at specific frequencies called the natural frequencies, or resonant frequencies of the string. When you drive the string at one of these frequencies, you get resonance and a large amplitude standing waveforms.
And these waves have points that don't move.
Yes. They have points of zero amplitude called nodes. For a string fixed at both ends, the ends themselves must be nodes.
Okay.
And in between the nodes, there are points of maximum amplitude called antinodes, or sometimes venters.
So the string just vibrates up and down between the nodes.
That's right. These specific standing wave patterns are called the normal modes of oscillation.
Normal modes.
Yep. For a string fixed at both ends, the simplest pattern has nodes only at the ends and one antinode in the middle. That's the first normal mode, and its frequency is the fundamental frequency, or the first harmonic.
The lowest note the string can play.
Exactly. Then you can have a pattern with a node in the middle as well. That's the second normal mode, or second harmonic, with twice the frequency. Then the third normal mode with three times the frequency, and so on. You get higher harmonics.
And the sound of an instrument is a mix of these harmonics.
Precisely. The timbre comes from the mix of the fundamental and these higher harmonics.
Yeah.
This applies not just to strings, but also to air columns. In wind instruments like flutes or clarinets, they also support standing waves with specific normal modes.
Fascinating how it all connects. Okay, one last phenomenon. Beats. What are those? It sounds like something you hear when tuning an instrument.
That's exactly when you often hear them. Beats are a result of interference between two sound waves that have slightly different frequencies.
Slightly different.
Yeah. When they interfere, you don't just hear two separate tones. Instead, you hear a single tone whose loudness seems to pulse or beat periodically. Wah, wah, wah sound.
Ah, that pulsing sound.
That's it. The frequency of beats. How often you hear that pulse is simply equal to the difference between the frequencies of the two original sound waves.
So if one note is 440 hertz and the other is 442 hertz.
You'll hear two beats per second. Musicians use this to tune instruments. They adjust one string until the beats disappear, meaning the frequencies match perfectly.
Clever. And just to round things off on wave interactions, You mentioned reflection, interference, diffraction. Mm-hmm. Any other big principles? I saw a note about Snell.
Snell's Law. That governs refraction.
Refraction.
Refraction is the bending of a wave as it passes from one medium into another where its speed is different, like light bending when it goes from air into water.
Making a straw look bent in a glass.
Exactly. Snell's law relates the angles of incidence and refraction to the wave speeds, or refractive indices, in the two media. It's another fundamental principle governing how waves behave at boundaries.
Wow. What an incredible tour. We've gone from the very idea of a disturbance-carrying energy all the way to sonic booms and the intricacies of musical timbre. It really does feel like we've unpacked this invisible world that's just constantly shaping our experience, those aha moments. Seeing amplitude as loudness, frequency as pitch, interference causing beats, it does make things click.
Absolutely. And hopefully the real value here isn't just remembering the terms, but starting to, you know, actually notice these things happening.
Yeah.
When you hear an echo or notice how sound bends around a corner or even just appreciate the different sounds of instruments, you can now connect it back to these core principles. It's all waves just doing their thing according to these elegant physical rules.
Right. It's like having a new lens to see, or rather hear, the world.
Yeah. It demystifies it a bit, but also adds another layer of wonder, I think.
Definitely. So as you, our listener, go about your day, maybe take a moment. Listen to the sounds around you. Think about the light reaching your eyes. Consider how much more sense the world makes now, viewed through this lens of waves and sound. What other everyday things, maybe things that seemed a bit mysterious before, now click into place. It's something to ponder.